Colin Cullis, tell me about patronage. Can I tell you a quick story about patronage before we do that?
Yeah.
If my amateur sleuthing in the family tree is right, then I am a beneficiary 200 years later of patronage. I might be descended, and I don't know this for a fact, but I might be descended from a very famous West End actor by the name of John Whitfield, and he performed on the stages of the West End in London at the end of the 1700s. He might have been my great-great-great-great-grandfather. And there is evidence that this particular John Whitfield, who did exist, whether he was my great-great-great-great-grandfather or not, is a point of contention, which I yet to prove. But the evidence is he enjoyed the patronage of King George III, best known as Mad King George. And he took his kids to Windsor and met the king, and that's come some kind of a friendship. And that was a royal patron. Today, we see patronage as being a terribly bad thing. We've seen patronage dismantle so much of the fabric of society. Patronage undermined the state-owned enterprises. Patronage undermining the very fabric of the country. Is patronage necessarily a bad thing?
The form that we come to have associate South Africa with, that is the bad one. And I'm talking about a different kind of one. But as you'll find out, it does get complicated. And it's wonderful that you had that little historical thing, because I think, you know, the historical starting points do help us. And so originally, humans always had a need to be creative. But when we were sort of in survival mode, the people who didn't create anything that could be worn or eaten or had a very practical use, they never got a lot of support from anybody. They still arguably don't. But we always made music and books and dance and poems and, you know, this sort of stuff. But when powerful rulers started emerging, big empires started emerging, those rulers were looking for some entertainment. And of course, the people who were doing dance or music, as probably was most popular at the time, would say, yeah, bring these people here. But they could also do great artworks and portraits to make them look even more grand, or write stories to record all of their accomplishments. And in showing off all of this stuff, they could even impress the locals or get some rivals and enemies to be drawn a little closer. And that sort of peaked sort of in the Renaissance period, because now it wasn't just nobility that had the money to spend on artists. It was the merchant classes that had become very wealthy and wanted to get a little bit of that status for themselves as well. And Leonardo da Vinci and great creators like that came from that sort of a thing. Shakespeare arguably would have had a patron in time, actually Queen Elizabeth. So there's the royal patronage coming along as well for that sort of thing. But then advances forward, and in about the 1830s, a new kind of business model becomes popular thanks to publishing, and one particular tabloid in the US in particular, where advertising started becoming a good way to offset the cost for doing creative work. So this was in newspapers, but ultimately it spread to all sorts of things. And for the next sort of century, the ad model was the way things worked. Then the internet comes along, and of course everybody starts moving all of their content over there. And advertising rates on the internet, well, they've never been good. In fact, they're terrible for the most part. And so the ability to sustain all that is kind of hard. And ahead of the show, I wanted to try and see if anything around the attitudes of whether or not paying for things online is justified has changed. Because initially, the view was, if it is online, it should be free. And in some respects, that was kind of created because it was, you know, scientific work and stuff. And the ability to share and make things open and accessible to people was justified in that respect. But it wasn't meant to be all things must be free. Any music you create, any books you write, everything must just be available. However, when I did ask, and I gave people four options about would you pay to access online content, a full 60% said, no, it should be free. 12% said, not while some of it is free, which just means they're not going to pay until they absolutely have to. And for the parts that said, yes, they would, 20% said, yes, at the right price. And 8%, thankfully, said, yes, they already do. But that's kind of been the challenge. And in 2013, it was the challenge facing one Jack Conte, a musician who had a YouTube channel and was hoping to get noticed. Now, platforms like YouTube and the internet in general and social media are fantastic for getting noticed. But if you're ad supported, you need to have enormous audiences to generate enough revenue to kind of look after yourself. So there is no question that this has allowed us to find many more stars, and that ad supported models absolutely do work. But for a much greater number of people who thought they might make it in the creative arts, had to kind of give up those dreams and go back to finding something that would pay the bills. And again, this is kind of the scenario that Jack Conte found himself in. And along with co-creator Sam Yam, put together a website that would allow them to have people say, If you make a music video, I'll give you $10. And if they could get enough people giving them, let's say, anything between $1, $10, whatever the amount is, every time they put out a video, they can, one, first recoup the costs of doing the video, and then two, hopefully get enough people saying, I'll give you some money to start actually generating an income and say, this is now my work. Now, that's not to say that it didn't exist beforehand. Crowdfunding wasn't, well, had already been around, but crowdfunding typically said you've got a project or a specific cause, and then you raise money as a once-off, and then you go do the project. This was like a subscription or a membership. It was an ongoing, recurring payment of varying amounts of money that would allow you to sort of say, well, that's my new income. And rather than getting one big income from a person, a company, a patron, you now have hundreds or thousands of patrons all giving you small amounts of money, but collectively allowing you to do very well. And so they created this company called Patreon, which is not the only one that does this, but I'd probably say it's the principal one or the best known one. And at the moment, 6 years down the line, they've got about, they've got over 100,000 creators that now draw their funds from this, about 3 million patrons. And while many of them probably still do quite modestly, some of them do very well. The two best ones, and I don't mean to skew what people can expect by giving the best ones, but it is remarkable to say so. One is a podcast created by a couple of guys who, you know, were kidded with when they did some stuff to say, yeah, you guys should really do this. And so they started doing it and started becoming successful, and they've got over 20,000 patrons and are making over $100,000 a month. And it's a team of about 6 or 7 of them that put this podcast together, one or two a week, and they kind of just shoot the breeze about stuff that's happening in the world. The other one, and maybe this one won't surprise you, but it's a company that makes little add-ons for the Pokemon Go game, and they have got 50,000 patrons. I couldn't quite determine how much they're earning for that one, but that's the most that's the channel with the most supported patrons. And again, this is a community of people who want to play a game, and there's millions of them playing it. So you only need a small percentage of them to say, oh, I'm struggling to get this or that or some other element of the game, in which case I'll hand you some cash to allow me to continue playing this game because I enjoy it. And that's the kind of the setup. So if you're writing books or web comics, this is quite popular, podcasts, there's a lot of podcasts that are supported with people on Patreon. And there is even a section for adult entertainment, which is a bit of a nebulous kind of thing, but porn stars and whatever else, the porn industry has been decimated again by the internet sort of taking all that away. So individual adult entertainers have taken to saying, well, these are now my patrons, and I will then create content specifically for them, and they seem to be doing okay. But here's where it all starts getting a bit murky and a bit tricky. Tail end of last year, Patreon removed some accounts because they said they had broken their terms, because some of the creators were using hate speech in some of their content. Now, the tricky part about that is, and it's understandable, but they're sort of like a bank. You know, is the bank supposed to regulate what you do in your business if it doesn't, you know, affect the bank? And in some respects, Patreon has said, look, we're trying to build an ecosystem, and that ecosystem needs to have, you know, the support of the community who is supporting artists, and we want those artists to be working towards sort of a common goal for humanity. The alternatives, though, they say, no, we're actually here for free speech. And on one respect, having something purely driven by free speech in societies that are oppressive or don't allow people to be able to support themselves, you can imagine investigative journalists in countries that don't really support that sort of thing, having somebody say, here's some money so that you can keep doing that, that is a good thing. But the flip side, of course, is what if it's a special interest group? What if it is the patronage that South Africans have got to know, where I can create some undue influence? I can get a bunch of people to start
Suddenly there's a deposit from Bosasa in your bank account or whatever the case might be. Yeah,
exactly right. And, you know, when you can create like 40 or 50 little accounts and you're paying a small amount into all of those accounts, you can lose those payments, but the person on the other end will be receiving it. Effectively, it'll be laundered through companies like this, and you receive nice clean money on the other side, and they input nice dirty money on the front end. So there has to be some more regulation. Patron here having dealt with one around hate speech, but they're going to be tricky bits with the amounts you can get. LibrePay is I'm not quite sure which country it's based in, but they put a cap on the amount that any individual patron may give in a payment session. Again, if you pay too much and you seem to say, well, I've got this one patron, he's giving me over $300 every week, you're going to start thinking, well, let me find out more about this guy. Maybe I should tailor my content to that. And as an anecdote, Shakespeare had a particular patron. He would make references to the patron. And at one point, apparently, he'd use something in the play which he thought would be good for the patron. wasn't so good with the monarchy, didn't like it, chucked him in the Tower of London. So, yeah, sometimes having your creators be a little too aligned to their patrons isn't necessarily a good thing. And their model, I think, is kind of good. So the reason why somebody would want to use a service like this, if I'm starting out as a creator, I might have a couple of thousand people following me, but I'm not like a web coder and I don't know how all the banking stuff works. So for a fee that effectively works out to 10% of whatever I make, I can just, you know, click, put a button on my site and say, hey, everybody wants to support me, just go there. And all of the paperwork, all of the infrastructure is taken care of. So Patreon takes 5% typically, most of them do. And then there's 5%, which are bank charges, et cetera, that, you know, you can't get away from. So for a creator to say, hey, I'll be able to, one, find people who can assist me and then get 90% of the proceeds from it, that's not necessarily a bad thing. And so now the question really is, if the abiding view of so many people with ad models where it's very little revenue, or that people still believe things need to be free, then it's finding those people who are able and willing to pay and giving them an easy method for doing so. And in this respect, then I suppose you can say the internet has made our life easier, but it's certainly not made it any less complex. And how we navigate then how and who gets supported by which means via platforms like this, well, that is going to need a little scrutiny, or else the patronage we have come to know in South Africa may well also start spreading here.
Colin Cullis with Business Unusual.